I'm super happy. Are you happy? Welcome to the Be You, Find Happy podcast. Here you'll find tips and tricks to inspire you on your way to happiness, to live a courageous life of authenticity, and learn how to speak your truth with grace. I'm Michaela Johnson, and welcome to our podcast. Some amazing human on this earth plane. I am so grateful that you are here. Just wanted to take a second and say, if you click like or hit subscribe, it helps this podcast continue. I want you to live the fullest expression of your experience in life, and you can find so much more by visiting beyoufindhappy.com. There you'll find Empowered, my motivational journal for women, links to all of the various books, and so much more. Thank you for being you.
Hi, Bruce. Welcome to Be You, Find Happy. I am so excited to have you on today. We're going to talk about kindness. You're so cool. You've got like, you're a pastor and a podcaster and a parent and a coach, and you've just got all this crazy cool stuff going on. Can you share with the listeners a little bit about all that you do and how you got into this?
Sure. Yeah. I'm going to tell my kids that somebody told me I was cool. They won't believe me, but, I try to tell them all the time, your dad's cool, I promise. And they're like, okay, whatever.
Sure, dad.
Yeah. If you have to tell us, then you probably aren't. So I'm born and raised. I'm a native Californian. I've been here, all my life, Northern California, and have, had the honor and privilege of serving in a lot of different areas, mostly around social justice and positive spaces. I'm a Presbyterian minister, so part of the Presbyterian Church USA. I've been doing that for about 25 years, but alongside of that, I've worked with organizations and individuals looking at leadership and everything from technology and how to use it well to parenting, to organizational structures. And I try to do it all in a way that, I'm not an academic, I'm not super heady, but try to create meaningful spaces where movement actually takes place beyond just kind of the conversation. So I do a lot of that. I'm half Filipino, half Chinese. My grandparents immigrated from China and the Philippines, and also involved with a lot of social justice around racial reconciliation and the AAPI community. So I get to do a lot of different things.
Wow.
Really,
so
grateful.
You said Filipino and Japanese?
Yeah, Chinese. Yeah, Filipino,
Chinese.
Chinese.
Okay.
Yep.
Wow. So I just have to ask, do you have a good lumpia recipe?
My grandparents do, and which we just have passed down from person to person. And my church, actually, every year they do a huge lumpia making thing, and you just buy a bunch of it and then just freeze it all day. Yeah, there you go.
It's like my dream. I freaking love lumpia.
Yeah.
It's interesting that you're on the podcast today, because I've actually been listening to Andy Stanley. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you're familiar with him.
Sure.
He's got the Your Move podcast, and I'm listening to the series that What Happy Couples Know Nothing. So it's been kind of fun. I want to talk though a little bit about your latest book, In Defense of Kindness: Why It Matters, How It Changes Our Lives, and How It Can Save the World. A big proponent of kindness here. It's a lot easier said than done sometimes, especially when you're being triggered or people are, you know, coming at you in a way that's less than kind. What are your thoughts? What inspired the book? Tell me about that.
Sure. Yeah. You know, I think one of the best endorsements I got was not in one of the official ones, but a friend of mine on social media says to me, I don't want to read your book because it may make me behave differently. And I'm like, yeah, it might, because for me, I think what has happened in the world is kindness. There's two things. One is we confuse kindness with being nice and avoiding conflict or not rocking the boat or just simply letting yourself be walked all over. That's one way we look at kindness. And the other way we look at kindness is we set the bar really low, and that in many ways – there's a whole chapter about how it's easy to be a good dad these days, right? You just have to show up and – pick up your kids every once in a while, and everybody's like, gosh, what a great dad. But those who operate in the mother role, they're hauling, my three kids and all this stuff. And you know, they don't get the same kind of elevation of respect. I think we've done that to kindness in many ways. We have dropped down that all we have to do to be kind sometimes is not be a jerk. And I feel like that has devalued the transformative power of kindness, which for me is about understanding that every person across from you, no matter what you think about them, is a created and complex human being. And not only do I believe that, but then I act as if I believe it to be true, that the way that I walk in the world and live in the world then values the complexity of that person opposite me. And in no other time, you know, than right now, across political division or theological division or ideological division, is it is important for us to do that. And so I've been inspired by the politics of our country, by personal relationships, by all these things that I could decide that I'm just going to one-dimensionalize that person and cut them off, or I can figure out how do I call people on their actions, like I'm not just going to let anything go, but do so in a way that actually has potential for reconciliation or movement in the future. And that's when I think about kindness, I think about it as a virtue and a posture that actually moves society forward in a positive way. And so, but as you said, it's not easy. We got to actually choose to do it. It's not just about wearing a t-shirt or putting a bumper sticker on. We actually have to wake up every morning and choose to be kind. So.
Well, you know, as you're talking, I'm thinking too about how one of the ways that I can find some level of compassion for difficult people or people who are not being as kind to me is by just knowing that they're going through something that I can't see on the surface, you know, sure. Like that they've got some level of hurt inside of them that's creating this. But I'll tell you what, there are times where, man, like my internet service provider, I just grandly dislike them. And I have a hard time finding an air of kindness when I have to call them because it's like the freaking thing never works. I'm always paying for it. And it's not their fault. It's not the person who's answering the phone's fault, but it's still like, I'm so agitated by the time I'm on the phone with them that I'm just kind of, how should I say, you know, sassy or spicy with my language. You know, I'm not like, hi, how's your day? I'm like, this is enough. I am exhausted. Like I've got a real snotty tone, you know?
Well, and I, you know, and I'm on those, I mean, this is part of like organization or companies are not people. They're made up of people, but you know, so there's one thing to see a company as a complex organization or an organism. And it's another to see the person who's part of that system. I always find myself when I'm on those calls saying out loud, I know that this isn't completely your fault, but I need you to hear my concern. I mean, I actually say those things out loud so that I'm reminded that we're both human beings and we're both, and I'm frustrated. They know I'm frustrated. They get dumped on all day. And it's not that, and again, it's not that we let the company or their responsibility off the hook at all. It's how do we do it in a way that doesn't dehumanize either one of us, right? Those of us that are on that end of being frustrated or those who are having to receive it or being paid to receive that. Like, how do we limit the dehumanization that happens? And I think that's, if we can do that, oh my gosh, in every interaction, again, we're not, it's not about just avoiding conflict or letting people do whatever they want or walk over us. It's about acknowledging that we can be in disagreement without dehumanizing one another and stripping dignity away from the other person. So I actually say it out loud. I hear myself when I'm on those calls going, I realize that you're receiving a lot, but you got to hear me. So there you go.
I like that. I do. I actually really love that. So what about when parents show up in a way that's less than kind out of maybe exhaustion or frustration or whatever? How do you handle that one?
Yeah. So I do a whole chapter on forgiveness and apologies and what makes apologies really important and powerful and transformative. And the overall arching around apologies for me is when they become transactional, they're no longer genuine or they're no longer as meaningful or transformative. And so, but I think the hardest thing to do is apologize to your children. I don't know who's listening, but either if you have children or you've had children around you or you've watched parent, people, children, whatever your adjacency is to kids, you know, I have three and, it's difficult to apologize because you're in power. You're supposed to know better. And you know that you're not perfect and you don't want your kids to know you're not perfect, but they know you're not perfect. And so I find myself actually when I am stressed and I take it out on my kids or my family, I apologize and I don't expect them to even I don't expect that to be transactional where, okay, now you can stop crying or now you can stop being frustrated with me or now you can stop being mad. But I just need them to know I realize that what I said or how I raised my voice or that hurt you. And I am going to try to not do that again. And you take whatever time and energy you need to sit with that and come back to me later, whatever. But I just need you to know that I apologize to you. So I think when we do that with our kids, especially that having the courage, and I think it's courage to do that because it's such a vulnerable thing to do. But oh my gosh, can you imagine what we're teaching our children when we can say to them, even this person who in some mythical parent-child relationship is supposed to be perfect is not. And I'm going to acknowledge that. So I'm a better person because I can acknowledge that I'm not perfect.
Right.
And I want you to be able to do that and model that with your friends in your community and with me as your parent. I mean, that it's powerful, but it's so difficult to do because we do think parents, we think we're supposed to be perfect and our kids know we're not. So the better we can live that out, the better.
So how do you apologize? Like how do you circle back on something? Like what do you say?
Yeah. So I just think about the last time I kind of snapped at my kid and was a little teenagery back to them. You know, part of it is understanding relationships and life stages and just the ebbs and flow. I have we have one kid left at home. He's a senior in high school this year. And so we'll be empty nesters. So we are at that stage of they're moving on to whatever's next in their young adult life. And, I've found that I actually need to give a little bit of moment so that I'm really able to understand that, yes, what I did either sometimes needs just to be let go or if I need to come back and correct this. And so I will walk. I'm just thinking about an instance. Walk back in the room and say, hey, I just want to say that I overreacted in this. I'm really sorry about that if that hurt you in any way. And then I don't actually wait for a response. And this is a child to child. Every child is different. Every parent is different. So we have to parent every child differently. And so, you know, one of my kids, I just need to say something and then I need to leave and give them room to think and contemplate. And then we'll connect back later. But I think for parents, it's our duty to make that first gesture and to figure out how each of your kids, or loved one in your family best will hear that and when. So there's a little bit of translation that needs to go on. So some need to hear right away. Others they need a little pause. But it can never be a transactional experience. It can't be, I apologize, so now you must do this. Because that's not really apology. That's a leveraging of power and trying to get abdication from something we've done. And that's not what we're looking for when we apologize. We're looking for an acknowledgement for that other person to genuinely hear that we have wronged them and we understand and we're going to try to do better next time.
I love that. And, you know, by modeling that, they do that as well.
Oh, yeah. I mean, anything we do, right? I mean, you know, if you have kids around you sometimes they learn new things and it blows your mind and it's amazing. And then there are those moments where you're like, oh, I see where they got it. And for good and bad, right? You see behaviors. And I don't put blame on parents for everything that a child does. You know, most of a child is raised by people outside their home in many ways. And so, you know, I think that, but there's a lot that we learn from our family of origin, both positive and negative. And I want to fill that space as much as I can with positive things that they can take on to their lives as they move on.
I love that too. So tell me what you're working on right now. What's it like to be a pastor? How's that experience? I was even just listening about how, you know, some of the beliefs in the Bible, you know, in Christianity are that women are to submit to their men. But if you actually read, it talks a lot about how men are supposed to embrace their women in the way that Christ embraces them. So it's interesting. I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, well, I come out of a fairly progressive denomination. So I come out of the Presbyterian Church USA, if folks can Google that. And so we are one of the more progressive denominations around marriage and LGBTQIA right affirmation and all that. So I pastor a church in Palo Alto, First Presbyterian Church of Palo Alto, and have been here for about 2 years. I pastored in San Francisco for about 30 years and started a church there. I think the religious landscape right now is fraught with a lot of misunderstanding. I think there are a lot of different conflicting versions of Christianity out there, and what Jesus was, who Jesus was, and what Jesus taught, and that I think we have to engage people where they are. I find right now, I love being a pastor because I'm engaged in our community. I've only been in this area for a couple of years, but I'm engaged in the public square and around community organizations as well as my church. And so that connection allows us to be engaged in life beyond just our congregation. And I think that's an important thing right now, is that folks understand that there are a variety of faith traditions, a variety of versions of Christianity out there. And we're all trying to work towards healing and wholeness in the world and do no harm. And I think that that's an important piece that we all have to recognize. But we get caught up in a lot of rhetorical arguments. And I disagree greatly with some of the public theologians out there, which is fine. So I think it's a very complex time, but I love it. I was raised by a church that loved me and was active in the community. And I think the church has to remain active in the community. There is no separation between, for me, faith and politics. Those are intertwined because there's a difference between church and state, but not faith and politics. And we have to be engaged in the life of the world right now. And I think that that's, for a lot of folks, a difficult thing to do, but I think important for us all.
I so agree.
Okay. And what I will say about the Bible stuff too, I have a seminary degree, and I always tell people that everybody proof texts with Bible, because the Bible is so big that if I want to pull out one line, I can pretty much back up any position about anything. And so our job as people who are followers of the word is to take it really seriously, so that we don't proof text just what we believe, but our beliefs come out of a deep study and understanding of the fullness of our scriptures. And so, because I can always, any position I can take and say, oh, here's three lines or three words that will back up what I believe. And that's not how we are to use scripture. And I think so the language around women and men, there's tons of stuff that you could, I mean, we justified slavery for years. Slaves obey your master. And if you just take that out, right, that's a piece that gets used, has been used historically to oppress people. Well, that's not exactly how we wanted to think about it. And, you know, women submit. That's been used in negative ways forever. I mean, so, well, you know, again, so when you brought that up, it's like, just, we got to take the fullness of scripture. And that's what makes, I mean, my faith alive in the world, is when you take the fullness of the text that we value.
Yes.
Little did I know I'd be talking about the Bible and church here today, too. I love it.
Thank what you for, would you like to talk
thank
about?
Thank you for asking. No, yeah, I can talk about a lot of things. As I tell my publisher and others, I'm a brander's nightmare, because I have a lot of opinions about a lot of things. And I do that intentionally, because I refuse to be one-dimensionalized. And I think that's one of the problems we have in the world, is we one-dimensionalize other people, and we allow ourselves to be one-dimensionalized. So if you were to follow me on Twitter or Instagram, any of those, I'm not just one thing. It's not just about social justice or church or this or that. It's a variety of things. If you invite me into your world, you're going to get everything from church. You're going to get social justice. You're going to get stuff around lately in San Jose, where near where I am, around gun violence. You're also going to get pictures of my dog, my kids, baseball games, soccer. I mean, you're going to get it all, because we're all complex people. And if we could see that in each other, the world might be a little better place.
We are very complex people. I truly do like that, you know, we are unique in that way. I mean, I think if everybody was the same, the world would be awful, you know?
Right, but we want everybody to be the same. I think that's the problem, is because we're not, right? We all intellectually, we know this. Like, this is not, oh my gosh, really? We're not all one-dimensional? I mean, we all intellectually know this.
Right.
But the world is easier when we don't try to live into that. I mean, it's easier. If I could just say, all X believe this. I'm listening to a podcast right now called, now I just can't remember what it's about, the Falwells and Liberty University. And there was a book written recently by a student who posed and went to Liberty to just spend a semester there. And he was expecting to find demonic people there. Now, I'm not a supporter of most of what Liberty stands for, but, you know, he thought that he was going to get there and everybody was going to be just these bigoted, like, everything was going to be awful. And what he discovered was people are just people. He disagreed greatly with some of the beliefs, but even, you know, in a place that has been, like, demonized, the people that are part of it are just as complex. And I think if we can cross the many lines that exist in our society into places and just acknowledge that reality that we know is true, that folks are diverse and complex on the other side, man, how much better the world would be.
And so how can people do that? Like, how can they acknowledge the diversity? How is diversity something that could be acknowledged?
Yeah. So I think this goes back to, if we feel it's important now, or it's pushing on us, or it's challenging us, it probably means that it's not been part of our habit and our lifestyle in the past. So the world and the United States are coming into some, you know, we've been undergoing racial a reckoning for a long time, but especially this year as we're just past the 1 year death and murder of George Floyd. This racial reconciliation, if we choose things like being anti-racist, or we want to be more kind, or we want to look at gender differently, or we want to look at things that we know are pushing on us a little bit, it's probably because we haven't been forced to before, which means that it's not habitual. Which means that every morning I have to decide if I'm going to be a kind person. Like, I think if you were to talk to my friends and community, they would say, Bruce is a pretty kind person, especially I just wrote a book on it. But, you know, we're not all what people would want us to say. So every morning I have to decide, am I going to be kind today? And that's not like author speak, right? That is when I stand in line at my favorite coffee shop every morning, I try to get up every morning, take a walk, and I reward myself with a cup of coffee on the way back. I have to decide how I'm going to interact in the world. Am I going to rush in and not make eye contact and just grab my coffee because I paid them for the service? Or am I going to go in feel a little bit like just take a breath and an exhale and walk in and either nod or say thank you or whatever, just to provide a moment of acknowledgement of humanity in that space? Like, that's a choice I have to make. And that's a small choice, but I believe every interaction we have is either positive or negative. And so that's exhausting to do all the time, but yet that's what we have to do in order for us to habitualize anything. So if we want to habitualize an understanding of diversity, when we see something happen, we have to check our initial reactions, to check the initial internal questions we ask ourselves. What is my reaction? When I see somebody on the street, what's my initial physical, mental, emotional reaction to what I see? And if I'm not comfortable with that, then I have to force myself next time to rethink how I react. And I think that's how we begin to make a commitment to seeing diversity differently, is by just acknowledging what we have inside of us that has held us back from doing that in the first place. And that's tiring. It's also, if you're in a community that's not very diverse, it's difficult to do. And so proximity is important, acknowledging that we carry the prejudice of our communities often into spaces, and that's everyone. But trying to make it habitual and making the choice to be different is what we all have to do. And if you're not forced into that sometimes, I think that's what we understand as privilege, that if I don't have to think about this, then I'm not going to choose to think differently. So we have to choose to think differently, because it's so easy for the world to tell us that we don't have to. So I would just say, have the courage to challenge things that you've believed in the past, and really have the courage to change reaction and questions and mindset. Otherwise, we're just going to continue to be down this road. And that's not what we want. We want to find more transformative, healing places and whole places in the world.
I love it. How can people get a hold of you, Bruce? How can they learn about what you got?
Yeah. So my last name is Reyes-Chow. I'm the only one in the world. So when people tell me they can't find me, I always say, well, you didn't look that hard. So if you were to Google Reyes-Chow, you can find me. But I'm on Instagram, Twitter, all the socials at @BReyesChow. And that's the best way to find me. You can search up for my books and all those kind of things and all the places. I have a podcast, all that. But if you just look up Reyes-Chow or @BReyesChow on all the socials, that's where you can find me and connect with me.
This was awesome. Thank you so much. And as always, we include this in the show notes. But thank you, Bruce, so much for coming on today. It was great to talk about the lovely idea of being kinder.
Great. Thank you for having me.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
This has been a BU Find Happy podcast. For more inspiration, check out the links.